all, thank you everybody for accommodating the change of schedule for today. My apologies for the last minute change. So it is Thursday, so I'm going to start with some parsha as always on Thursday. This is an idea that I had and that I developed, I don't know, like 20 years ago or something, maybe 15 years ago. So back then I used to have much more developed ideas, I think, in terms of drushas. So bear with me a little bit, but I think it's a good idea. The opening pasuk in the parsha seems to put a lot of emphasis on Moshe Rabbeinu in particular, meaning the Ramban points out that you want to tell Moshe Rabbeinu that he's supposed to command about the menorah. It could have just said tzav, but it doesn't say tzav. It says v'ata titzaveh. V'ata, meaning the emphasis, and you Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to be the one that is mitzaveh. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu is mitzaveh everything in the Torah. Why does it have to say specifically when it comes to lighting the menorah, when it comes to preparing the oil for the menorah, v'ata titzaveh? Furthermore, there is a medrash that comments on the pasuk Zeis Ra'anan Yafa Pritor Kara Hashem Shemecha. The medrash says V'chi L'zayis Levadnim Shlu Yisrael Halo L'kol Peros V'ilanos Tovosim Shlu Yisrael. Are the Jewish people only compared to a Zayis that we're called the Zeis Ra'anan, that Hashem calls our name like an olive? We're actually compared to all of the delicious fruits. Tzadik Katamar Yifrach, we're compared to a Tamar. Ke'erez Balvanon El Ginas Egos Yeraditi. There are many, many examples of wonderful fruits that we're compared to. So what is it about olives that Zeis Ra'anan, that's Kara Hashem Shemecha, Hashem calls our name based on the olive. So says the Medrash, Elema Zayis, here are the incredible characteristics of an olive. Kochin v'chovdenoso, you beat it and you crush it, v'achar kach nosin shmano, and then it produces the most spectacular oil. Kach Yisrael, so too with the Jewish people. Ho'umos ba'im v'chov shemosam yimakom l'makom v'chovdimu makimosam. The umos olam come and they beat us and they're terrible to us and they exile us. V'achar kach chosu b'tshuva, and then we do tshuva v'akadosh baruch hu mekablan, and akadosh baruch hu is mekabel our tshuva. Not only that, davar acher, mashem and zayis ein mesariv v'mashke shabolam. Just like oil doesn't mix with water, kein Yisrael ein mesariv v'umos. The Jewish people do not mix with the nations of the world. Davar acher, mashem and lemailam and amashkin. Kach Yisrael k'shaos and rosh akadosh baruch hu lemailam mekol umos. Just like the oil rises above the mashkin, so too the Jewish people rise above the umos ha'olam. So if I were to ask you, you know, are these good things? Meaning these are our comparison to an olive, right? What the Medrash apparently trying to tell us is that we're like an olive because we are lofty, we are great, we don't mix with the umos ha'olam, we rise above the umos ha'olam. And those last two comparisons, in fact, fit that narrative that we are better or we are in some way separate from, greater than. But the first one, the first thing, is that really so great? The first thing that the Medrash said is that just like an olive has to be beaten and battered and bruised and crushed, so too, in order to get any goodness out of the Jewish people, you need to beat, to beat the gesundheit out of us in order to be able to get something good out of Klal Yisrael. That's I don't know if that's actually a phrase, but it should be. That's what it takes in order to get something good out of Klal Yisrael. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Furthermore, the Medrash tells us, Nivchar Shem Me Osher Rav, Nivchar Shemo Shel Mordechai Me Osher Shel Haman. Since it is Chodesh Adar, even though we're a long way away from Purim, Nivchar Shemo Shel Mordechai Me Osher Shel Haman. That the shame of Mordechai is even better than the wealth of Haman. And that's a little bit of a funny medrash also, because normally when you say that one thing is even better than the other, you're describing two things that are good, right? Meaning you're saying that there are two pizza shops in town, they both have good pizza, but that one's even better than that one. So that they're both very good. But Nivchar Shmo Shel Mordechai Me'osho Shel Haman, what does that mean? That the shame of Mordechai is even better than the wealth of Haman. The wealth of Haman is not good. That was very bad for the Jewish people. Not only that, why would you say the Shmo Shel Mordechai is better than Osho Shel Haman? Say Mordechai is better than Haman. Mordechai's leadership, Mordechai, what's Shmo Shel Mordechai is greater than Osho Shel Haman? So to answer all of these questions, we're going to ask a whole nother series of questions. Want to learn a short Gemara in Maseches Megillah, and through that, hopefully, we'll be able to come through understanding that Gemara or an insight in that Gemara. Hopefully, we'll be able to answer all these questions. Gemara Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, tells us as follows: Shalu Talmidim Rav Shimon Ben Yochai, Talmidim Ask Rav Shimon Ben Yochai, Mivayman Is Chay V'Sfaneim Shal Yisrael Shabosah Dar Kliyah. Why is it that Klal Yisrael in that generation deserved to have a decree of genocide against the Jewish people, which is what happened, in the story of the Megillah? Some lahem imratem. So a good Rebbe, right? The Talmud asked the questions. The Rebbe said, "What do you think?" Tell me your thoughts first. So they start sharing their thoughts. Amru mipnei shenenu misudasu shlosa rasha. Obviously, it's because they enjoyed the suuda of Achashverosh. So amru lahem. So he said to them, "Came b'shushan yehodu." Then only in Shushan they should have gotten killed, because they're the ones that were enjoying the suuda. The Jews everywhere else should not have had a decree against them. So he finally said, the Rebbe gave the answer, because they were mishtachav el tzelem, because they bowed to tzelem. So amru chimas apanim yesh b'davar. Whoa! If they did that, how did Hashem let it go? Right? How did Hashem not punish them? At the end of the day, they were saved and nothing happened to them. So how could Hakadosh Baruch Hu show such favoritism to Klal Yisrael? They're going to be mishtachav el tzelem and nothing? Nothing's going to happen? Oh, it was just a scare, you know? But that's it? And then nothing's going to happen to them? So him lo asal lefnim lefichach nasim mehem el lefnim lo nasim imayim el lefnim. Says the Gemara, they weren't really being ovid of avodah zarah. They didn't believe in anything that they were doing. It was an outward projection of being mishtach l'tzelem in order to make their oppressors happy. But that's it. They didn't believe in the avodah zarah, and therefore Kadosh Baruch Hu's punishment was to give them a scare, to make it look like something was going to happen, but nothing actually happened. Just like their avodah zarah was not. It was just looking like avodah zarah, but it wasn't actually avodah zarah. So a number of problems with this Gemara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the tshuva. The initial answer was they were nenu misudasu shlachos verush, and the Rebbe's answer was they were mishtach v'letzelim. So they have a kasha on it. We have a kasha. How could it be they're mishtach v'letzelim? V'chimas upanim yesh v'davar. Hashem's going to show favoritism to Klal Yisrael. Have you heard of tshuva? Meaning that wasn't the whole story. The whole story wasn't just that they were mishtach v'letzelim, and then Hashem said, "Okay, you're off the hook." They did tshuva. They fasted. They fasted for 3 days. There was a whole, there was tefillah. There was a lot that went into that. Of course, Kadosh Baruch Hu accepts tshuva. What kind of kasha is that? That they don't like the answer, that they're mishtach l'tzelem, because then it doesn't make sense that they got off the hook. Why doesn't it make sense? We do tshuva all the time. Furthermore, wouldn't they have had the same kasha in their own interpretation? Everybody agrees that an avera was done. It's just a question of which avera was done, right? Meaning, was it the avera mishtach l'tzelem, or was it the avera nenu misudas shalach l'shverosh? They have the kasha. How could it be that Hashem let them off the hook if they were mishtach l'tzelem? Well, how could it be that Hashem let them off the hook if they were nenu misudas shalach l'shverosh? Why is that any better? Furthermore, how does the fact that the Bnei Yisrael didn't truly believe in the avodah zarah help absolve them of guilt? Avodah zarah is yareg val yavar, right? If they hold a gun to your head, they say, bow to the avodah zarah. Obviously, if they're holding a gun to your head, it's not because you have this philosophical belief in the avodah zarah, right? You don't. It's not something that you trust the avodah zarah, that you have this sense of faith in the avodah zarah. And yet, you're not allowed to do it. It's yareg val yavar. So the answer is, oh, don't worry, they didn't really mean it. So what? They didn't really mean it. You're not allowed to do it. So why is that a valid answer? So I think that the idea, I don't remember where I saw this, I must have saw this somewhere, but that the idea that helps develop, that we could develop, that helps answer, I don't know how many questions we asked, whatever, 17 questions, that helps answer all of these issues that we raised as follows. It's possible that when it comes to doing tshuva, it's best, and this is true in chinuch, it's true in our own lives in so many different ways, not only in our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, but just in terms of doing anything good and anything right, that the most desired level of tshuva is when a person recognizes on his own, when one comes to it on his own, that that's the right way to behave, that that's the right thing to do, and didn't have to be pressured into it. And that certainly is something that Kodesh Baruch Hu desires from us, that we should be able to do tshuva. It should be something that we're able to come to on our own. It's true of chidushim in Torah, right? Sometimes it's good to hear a chidush in Torah. It's better to be led to it, to come to it on your own. And certainly that's true when it comes to doing the right thing, when it comes to doing mitzvos and maisim tovim, that a person on their own figures out that that's the best thing to do. But sometimes a person needs to be forced into tshuva in a certain way. A person has to experience piranus. And only then they take a step back, and that piranus sort of causes them to take stock in their life and think, wait a second, I must not be doing something right. I must be doing something wrong. And therefore, there has to be some reason for tshuva. And that tshuva is also acceptable. It's similar to the famous Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin in Perek Beis, who says, Kofen Elsa Lagarish Hashem Rotza Ani, that you force him until he says, Rotza Ani. He's not forced to give a get. Deep down, he wants to give the get, but we have to peel away all of that yetzer hara and that hatred and all of those feelings until you finally get to the rotza ani that's at his core. And sometimes that's what it takes for us to do tshuva. It's not insincere. It is sincere. It's real. It's just that we didn't come to it on our own. We had pressures in order to overcome that yetzer hara. We sort of had to purge the yetzer hara through Yisurin, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could finally see us do the tshuva. And tshuva mitoch pranos is acceptable, except with one exception. And that is when a person violates avodah zarah. If a person at his core doesn't believe in the whole system, if a person at his core doesn't believe in the Ribono Shel Olam, a person at his core thinks that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't create the world, or he did create the world and he abandoned it, or whatever other belief system he may have, then it's hard to say we're getting down to that rotza ani. We're getting down to, you know, what he really, really is. If at his core he believes in his heart that God abandoned the world and it's in somebody else's control, maybe tshuva shelo al yidei peronos is necessary. Meaning, maybe for such a person, you can't beat it out of him. It has to be something that he comes to. Maybe you can educate, and you can and maybe suffering peronos will cause him to reassess and to come to a different belief. But anything that he does, l'finim, anything that he just does as a show, because make it stop, you know, that's the kutim, that's Geri Arayo saying. Geri Arayo, if you hold Geri Arayo, it's invalid, meaning you could claim everything in the world, but if you really don't believe, you don't believe. And maybe that explains the Gemara. The Talmidim has suggested that the Bnei Yisrael were guilty of a sin of taiva. So for such a sin, tshuva mitoch yisurin certainly suffices. Oh no, there's a decree against us. We better do something about that. When Rav Shmuel Mechai suggested that the sin was one of avodah zarah, the Talmidim asked, I don't understand. If it was avodah zarah, tshuva mitoch yisurin shouldn't work. A threat of annihilation shouldn't be good enough if it was a sin of avodah zarah. They should have had to come to it. They should have had to arrive at the right conclusion. And Rav Shmuel Mechai answered that they never arrived at the wrong conclusion. Meaning they did avodah zarah, but it was they only acted as if they were doing avodah zarah, but they didn't believe in the avodah zarah. At their core, they were still good. At their core, they were still believers. So they were eligible for tshuva, even if it's motivated by Yisurin. And based on that, maybe we could explain everything else. The Medrash that compares us to olives is oil is only extracted when they're beaten. Oil is not created by the beating. The oil is there the entire time. The potential is there. It's the pintel of yid. It's that little bit of purity and of goodness that's in every olive. The olive has this pure and very expensive and valuable oil the whole time. The only way to extract it is by crushing it from the outside. Klal Yisrael is in that way. That's a great compliment to Klal Yisrael. I mean, you know, of the Mishalim that we say that the oil rises above and the oil is separate and all those things. Part of the greatness of Klal Yisrael is also that even when we look bitter, we look like a bitter olive. We look like something that's terrible. That if it's crushed, you'll get down to that pintel of yid. You'll get down to that mamin that's on the inside. You'll get down to that rotza ani. You're going to find it. You'll be able to uncover that kedusha that's inside of it. And that itself is a compliment. It's not a compliment that we have to be beaten, but it's a compliment that even when we look like we're off, we look like we're not really doing things right, that deep down on the inside, there is something that is spectacular inside of the Jewish person. There's a qualitative difference between these two types of tshuva. Tshuva that comes through Yisurin and tshuva that's prompted by Klal Yisrael, you know, coming to it on our own. And coming to it on our own doesn't mean coming to it on our own. It means that we listen to the messages and the mussar of our leaders and our neviim. Pasuk in Yeshayahu compares the Jewish people to a woman in labor pains. Kemo hara takriv oledes tachil tizak b'chavuleha kein hayinu mipanecha Hashem. The Ksav Sofer explains the comparison is based on the fact that a woman who experiences pains of labor to the point that she swears off ever being with her husband again. Marnida Lamanal says that a woman is in labor and she says, "That's it. I'm never going to be with this guy again. Look what the pain that it led to me." Until she forgets the pain and she becomes pregnant again, and then maybe with the next delivery also is before epidurals, right? So a woman would she'd swear it off. I'm never going to be with this guy. No, but then she does. She forgets it. So similarly, says the Ksav Sofer, so we suffer terrible yisurin. And we say, oh boy, we better do tshuva. And then the yisurin go away. And, that's the whole cycle of Sefer Shoftim. It's the whole cycle of Navi. That we, we're talking, you better. And then we don't listen. And then we start suffering. And then when we suffer, oh boy, we better change the way we're acting. We change the way we're acting until we don't. Until we don't feel the squeeze anymore. When we don't feel the squeeze, we go right back to the way we were before. But when a person buys into something, when a person really buys into a value, and it's not that he's just feeling the squeeze and he feels the pressure, but the Navi teaches him something, and he says, or the Talmid Chacham teaches him something, and he says, that makes sense. This is something that's true, and it's right, and it's inspiring. It has a more permanent impact. It doesn't just go back to as soon as the pressure is off, going back to what it was originally. Chazal tell us the many names of Mordechai, right? Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, that it actually referred to. The Gemara in the Gilad Dafid Bey says it actually refers to not only the names of his ancestors, right? A lot of times when you have Ben so and so, it doesn't mean the son of, right? Ben very often means you call someone a Ben Torah. It doesn't mean his dad's name is Torah, right? His dad is not called to the Torah, it's Torah Ben, whatever, So when you call Ben Yair, says the Gemara, Sheheir Einayim Shel Yisrael, that he enlightened the Jewish people. Ben Kish, Shehikish Adalasei HaTfilah, that he banged down, he knocked on the doors of Tfilah. Ben Shimi, Sheshama El Tfilaso. So Haman gaining wealth and prestige was actually a positive development for the Jewish people because it put a certain squeeze on us. And we would not have done Tshuva properly without having to face the threat of a Haman who had risen to power. But it could have happened in a better way. It could have happened by listening to the influence of all of the names of Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish. Then we wouldn't have had to face the terror of Yosho Shel Haman. Nivchar Shemo Shel Mordechai. What the names of Mordechai represent, that is Nivchar Me Oshro Shel Haman. That would lead us to a better and more lasting kind of relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Maybe going back to what we started with, that's the emphasis on Moshe Rabbeinu when describing how to extract the oil for the menorah. Va'ata, make sure va'ata, that the pure oil is extracted by you, by the Jewish leader, by Moshe Rabbeinu, by our rebellion. V'yikhu elecha, let them deal with and respond to the tzaddikei ador so that they won't have to deal with the wrath of the rishei ador. And that will also allow for the benefit of this everlasting influence, lahalos ner tamid, and not the temporary chevle leda that we feel when inspired by the Hamans of the world who just put the pressure on us till we have no choice but to do tshuva. This is always the challenge of Klal Yisrael, to be able to listen to our leaders, to be able to listen to our talmidei chachamim, to listen to gedolei Torah. And very often it's a challenge for people. Sometimes people, a common thing people struggle with is, what if they don't agree with Gedolei Torah? You don't have to agree with everything Gedolei Torah say, but in the end of the day, we have to trust their judgment over our own, and we have to value the hadracha that they try to give us, and we have to appreciate what it means to be a Talmud Chacham, appreciate just how valuable that is to have Gedolei Talmidei Chachamim, and then when you have proper kavod for Talmidei Chacham, when you have proper kavod for what it means to achieve in Torah, then we'll be more receptive to all of the messages and all of the inspiration and the musr that they try to give us, so that we'll be able to live inspired lives that happen naturally and not have to go through all of the surin that Klal Yisrael goes through time and time again. Okay.